Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in a Tuesday edition of the Hoosier Report. We are inching closer to the start of Big Ten Conference tournament play. And really, for me, I think it's Thursday, maybe a little bit Wednesday. You've got games that start during the day this week. Noon tip-off at some of the different conference tournaments around the country. And that, to me, kind of is officially the signal that March Madness is here, because you've got the workday going on. I can remember even being in school and you're trying to get the television on in class, or trying to track the scores and find out what's going on. That, to me, kind of signals March Madness when you've got some of those daytime games going on across the area. But lots to talk about today. Obviously, Indiana and so many things there as they get ready for their game in the Big Ten Conference tournament coming up on Wednesday evening. And I think the good thing about Indiana, at least from a fan perspective, is I do like that Indiana's games at the Big Ten tournament, at least the first three, I believe, are definitely evening games, really kind of primetime matchup times they will play. Approximately 8:30 or so, I think, is the game time for Wednesday night, a very similar tip-off time if they are victorious Wednesday on Thursday against Penn State. And again, the next day, a very similar tip-off time in the nightcap of the Big Ten tournament that day as well. I do like that. Let's watch all the other games during the day and at odd times and early in the evening, and then get ready for Indiana at the end of the night. So lots of fun coming there. High school regionals this weekend. I told you yesterday that Lee Kelly and I will be at Washington to follow Silver Creek. We'll have their game, and I saw the times have been shifted at some of the regionals yesterday when the brackets were updated. 10:30 is going to be the tip-off for the Silver Creek game on Saturday, which means that we'll be on the air just a little before 10:30. And then Zach McCright is at Seymour on Saturday. We'll flip from Washington and Silver Creek coverage to Seymour and Floyd Central coverage. That tip-off, the second game they take on Bloomington South, does Floyd Central. It's been bumped back to a 12:30 start time to keep online with some other things. So that's the layout for Saturday, but we've got two other teams in Christian Academy and Providence that will be tracking Saturday as well. They will be playing for regional action. Just a very, very fun week for the area, for those teams especially, as practice continues. And now the challenge will be how many teams can we see from Clark and Floyd counties take the next step and win that first game at the regional? And then, of course, the big question this weekend, can any of the four teams punch their ticket beyond this Saturday's two-game regional? Can we get some semi-state participants here from Clark and Floyd counties moving on as well? Tonight, Romeo Langford and his Boston team are back in Indianapolis. And I know the last time that Boston came to Indianapolis to play the Pacers, it was a big night the Pacers had organized with New Albany High School. It was New Albany night at the Pacers game, and it was still fun because you got to see Romeo a little bit. You got to see him. I don't think he came out much before the game, if I remember correctly, but he did come out after the game, greeted a lot of the kids, signed a lot of autographs, did the things that Romeo does, but he didn't get to play. And obviously he was on the bench, and that's the stuff that you get excited about when he gets some ticks, even if it's a few seconds, but he didn't get that in his first trip to Indianapolis. But I would say tonight will be a little different. I'm not sure that he'll dominate the minutes tonight, but he definitely has a different role on the Celtics team at this point of the season than what he had back in, what was that, early December, I believe, when Celtics came to Indianapolis the first time this season. So if you're judging Romeo's NBA career so far, obviously not a red-hot start. He's not in contention for Rookie of the Year. I'm not sure that anyone predicted that he would be in contention for Rookie of the Year. But looking back at December until now, these are two good comparison points to see what's his role increased to, how has it changed, what type of minutes is he getting. And I think clearly he isn't getting the minutes that any of us hope and that he hopes as well. But his role has definitely changed, and he's much more of a player that's in somewhat the rotation for Boston. And again, it's the NBA. He's getting paid good money. And any type of forward progress is success. And there's definitely been some change and some success for Romeo so far. Let's hope it continues. Let's hope that as he edges his way more into a position, a consistent position with the team, that he gets more and more minutes. But it will be interesting to compare the box score, which was all zeros for Romeo the first trip to Indianapolis, back to his home state, and the box score tonight when he returns to Bankers Life Fieldhouse for the Pacers game. Yesterday, the Big Ten Awards came out as well. We're going to go through those in a moment. Immediately at the end of the regular season, you get the Big Ten Awards, which are always fun to take a look at. And for the most part, I think very agreeable. Trace Jackson Davis, really one of the lone Hoosiers recognized, I think, as we all thought that he would be, especially as a freshman. Some big things for him in his freshman year, so we'll catch up on that as well. Let's jump into the show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. We have a very busy show today. Segment one, our Zaxby's headlines. We'll take a look at some of the things I mentioned. Segment number two, Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star joins us. That segment each week presented by Coffee Crossing. Later in the show, segment three, Brandon Hoffman, the coach of Silver Creek. He joins us from Silver Creek High School. We're going to catch up on their sectional week and championship last week and take a look ahead at the regional, the Washington Regional, at the historic Hatchet House with Coach Hoffman when he joins us today, so I look forward to that. Yesterday we had Coach Sturgeon of Floyd Central, today Coach Hoffman, and we'll continue on this week talking to the local regional participants here from our local high school basketball programs. And finally, in the last segment today, Mike Pegram of Pegs.com, he joins as we get ready for IU at the Big Ten Tournament. We'll recap the Big Ten Award winners from yesterday that were announced, and much more. That's the guest lineup, the show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Don't forget to mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, and you'll receive $1 off your box lunch made to order for you at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's quickly go through some Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. Last night on his radio show, which we air here on the Big X, Coach Archie Miller said that point guard Devontae Green did not practice Monday due to an ankle tweak, an ankle injury is how he put it on his radio show last night. Green hurt his left ankle some point of the first half in the loss on Saturday to Wisconsin, and I believe the exact word that Miller used to describe the injury was, quote, a tweak, unquote, to his ankle. So, again, makes you a little nervous when you know what Indiana needs to do. They've got to beat Nebraska, not so much for the win or because Nebraska is a quality win on their tournament resume, but they've got to beat Nebraska, A, to move on in the Big Ten tournament, which obviously is necessary and everybody wants to see happen, and B, to keep a bad loss off of their resume, because I believe with as tight as things are right now with the NCAA tournament, this Nebraska game is really more so about not getting a bad loss on your resume every bit as much as it is adding a win to the win total. And, of course, then Indiana taking on Penn State in the second round of tournament play if they can get there, and that's a very quality opponent. Indiana's had some success with Penn State this year, a split in that series, and a second win over Penn State I think would have to be almost a clincher into the NCAA tournament. Also, we haven't talked anything about it. I have a feeling it's coming not just to our show, but to almost every sports show that covers any team or any area of the country. But the coronavirus, it's going to affect sports. And I think in some cases or in some locations, maybe it already has. But I don't think there's any question. I was talking with John Spears yesterday here at the studio, who has Spears on Sports When I Get Done at Noon, if you're listening live. And it's a matter of time until games get shut down with essential personnel and TV cameras only. because obviously you don't want to affect the ability for fans to view it and obviously the TV money. But Major League Baseball announced last night that they will join the NBA and also the NHL in closing clubhouses to media due to the fear of the potential spread of the virus. That was reported first by ESPN yesterday. And so you have to wonder, I saw out in California, I can't remember, I believe it was a county, one of the big counties with a big metropolitan city. It wasn't San Francisco, so I'm going to say it was San Diego. I don't have it up in front of me. But I saw where the county health authority, the health department, with events over, I think it was 1,000 people, public events over 1,000 people, you could no longer have that many people or more in attendance. So what happens, and they were talking about how that could affect the San Jose NHL team. What happens if a county or even a state, and I'm not sure regulatory-wise who has the ability to demand or declare that sort of ruling, but what happens when that happens in a county or a state that has an NCAA first-round, second-round games coming up here in just a couple weekends? So I think it's just a matter of time, whether it's locally, you know, you got state finals coming, not just in Indiana, but in Kentucky as well, down the pipeline just a bit, as more and more cases are discovered. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out in the world of sports. And, of course, obviously, first and foremost is health and safety and all those sorts of things. But it is going to be very interesting to see how this potentially could affect sports, even in our local area, even in the state of Indiana. Big Ten awards yesterday. I want to cover these really quick. First team, Luca Garza. This was the Big Ten coaches' first team. Luca Garza of Iowa, Anthony Cowan Jr. of Maryland, Jalen Smith of Maryland, of course, Cassius Winston of Michigan State, Lamar Stevens of Purdue as well. That was the first team. Trace Jackson Davis, the only Indiana player recognized by the coaches. He was on the third team, also the all-freshman team. Trace Jackson Davis of Indiana, Kofi Coburn of Illinois, C.J. Frederick of Iowa, Franz Wagner of Michigan, and Rocket Watts of Michigan State. I don't think any big surprises there. Player of the year, no surprise, Luca Garza of Iowa, very deserving. Defensive player of the year, no real big surprise here either to me, Xavier Tillman of Michigan State. Freshman of the year, it's not Trace Jackson Davis. I would have to believe that he came in second to Kofi Coburn of Illinois, who is the award winner. Sixth man of the year, Aaron Wiggins of Maryland. I think that's a good choice. And coach of the year, got to agree with this one as well, Greg Gard of Wisconsin. Joey Brunk was one of a number of Big Ten sportsmanship award winners. So Joey Brunk, a sportsmanship award, Trace Jackson Davis on the all-freshman team, and a third team member of the all-conference team is voted by the coaches. As far as the media voting panel, Trace Jackson Davis on the third team there as well. Lots of similarities, not exact from first, second, and third team, honorable mention all the way through, but pretty close between the coaches and the players. We'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star, presented by Coffee Crossing. Lots to talk about. IU, Archie Miller, and regional tickets. Remember all the problems getting Romeo tickets back a few years ago? There's an experience like that going on up at LaPel, where Blackford and Luke Brown are getting ready to play in the regional, and we'll talk about that as well. Coming up next with Greg Doyle, right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And welcome back in this segment, Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star, always with us, presented by Coffee Crossing, who would like to remind you their fifth location now open in downtown New Albany for you to enjoy. They turned their own bakery at 140 East Main Street into the fifth Coffee Crossing location. Greg Doyle, thanks for joining us here on this very busy week, college basketball and March Madness with conference tournaments basically underway. We know Indiana's seed at the Big Ten tournament, and we know their regular season finish, and now we can all examine and talk about and wonder what their NCAA tournament chances will be. And that's kind of been a common conversation when you've been with us over the last few weeks as well. Greg, the way I see it heading into the tournament, Indiana has to beat Nebraska, obviously, to advance to the next round, but they can't lose to them. The win doesn't help the resume a ton. The loss, however, to kind of a dismal Nebraska team, it does probably hurt their resume. That's going to be examined very closely here coming up on Selection Sunday and before. How do you see the tournament lining up for Indiana and what they've got to do to obviously find success there, but more importantly, punch their ticket to the NCAA tournament? Is it a couple wins in that tournament?
You know, I think it's the Nebraska game is clearly a joyless, just an utterly joyless game, because you can't lose it, but winning doesn't help you. So, which puts a whole different kind of stress on it. I think it's much, I mean, I didn't play college sports, but I played sports. It's got to be much easier. I know it's much easier to want to win because it's a big win than to just want to not lose. And so I'm not saying they're going to lose because they're going to play not to lose, but it's just a joyless game. I feel bad for IU that they're in this position where, I mean, frankly, they'd be better off playing Penn State or Michigan or Ohio. Somebody could beat them. They'd be better off going out and getting it than having this game. So you're right. This winning doesn't help them, but other than the sense that it beats the hell out of a loss, because a loss could crush them. I think they're in no matter what. But I'm not a bracketologist, and I'm not, you know, in a trash can somewhere.
Well, you good segue into my next question for you. Archie Miller, Joe Lunardi, he had some choice words and compared bracketologist and Mr. Lunardi to Sesame Street. Your thoughts on that? We've seen Archie be pretty dry most of the times in his press conferences, I think. We haven't seen him often go off on any kind of tangents or any kind of diatribes about certain things. Maybe I can remember one other thing that he spoke out a little bit on. But what was your take? I believe you were there for the game and then the press conference afterwards. What was your take on Archie's little bit there on Sesame Street and Joe Lunardi and bracketologist and his time at the A-10 and now how Indiana's been crapped on by Joe Lunardi?
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't know if you know this, or if you read my story, because I do this when I try to put readers there, but especially when it involves me, because, you know, they're reading my story. I'm the one that asked him the question, and I had no idea I was tossing him a softball he was going to hit, you know, for a home run. I mean, I knew it wasn't a hard question, but, like, I just said, you know, nobody knows what your chances are. You don't know, but what do you think? And he just goes off on Joe Lunardi. I thought in real time as it's happening, and sadly, this is how the world is about a lot of things, this is me. In real time, I enjoyed the hell out of it. And maybe because I asked the question, he was looking at me the whole time. I don't know, but I was giggling, and I like Archie. You know this. For 3 years, I like him and know him for 20 years and love to hire and all that. And in real time, that probably all shaded what I thought about it, but, you know, just with a few seconds to think about it, Joe Lunardi's a good guy. I know Joe too. He didn't deserve that. You know, he could – everybody deserves criticism. Anybody and everybody does, especially somebody who does a job like Joe does. I mean, you're just part of the game. But he didn't deserve that. So I don't like it. I don't condone it. I don't think it's funny now. I wish I hadn't thought it was funny in real time. But, you know, that's how it goes, I guess.
Absolutely. Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star, with us talking IU basketball. You mentioned that you're not a bracketologist. None of us are. And even some of the bracketologists, I saw Rick Bozich tweeted out a link to a – maybe even wrote a story about it. He tweeted out a link to a website where he actually rated – Rick didn't, but there was somebody that does rate bracketologists that are out there. And, gosh, first off, I didn't realize there were so many people – out there making bracket right. predictions, but I think it was over a 3-year period. It was an average over 3 years, and pretty interesting, because when I see bracketology stuff go around, and I'm going to maybe mention it or work it into the show. Obviously, Mr. Lenardi, who I have a lot of respect for, who met years ago, a very nice guy, and have always respected his work. And then Jerry Palm, you see him on TV. He's been around. He's got one of those recognizable names that we know. But there are many, many other guys. But those guys, and I don't want to say exactly, but I want to think Lenardi was 50th something, and I want to think that Palm was like 70th or 80th something in these three-year averaged ratings of bracketologists. So I mention that because nobody truly knows exactly how this thing is going to work out. But you mentioned, and I'm interested in your opinion as much as anybody, you mentioned you think Indiana may be in regardless what happens in the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, I don't understand what's been happening with IU's and I hope and I think I've been this way with you for a month or so, you know, it just on a week-by-week basis. I'm sure I've told you what I thought. And this is what I've been thinking really since January, is that I haven't understood why IU was so firmly in the tournament through January. But they were. They seemed to be anyway. And even early February, they were kind of in after, I forget what it was, there's a game where, okay, they're in. The bracketology, I mean, comfortably in. And then, yeah, they lost to Purdue, and they got swept by Purdue. But they beat Penn State. They go on the road and beat somebody. I think it was Minnesota, maybe. Nebraska, whatever. They beat Iowa at home. They've not gone undefeated, but they've added some big-time wins. And in the meantime, Florida State and Ohio State, their two best wins earlier in the year, both have just taken off again. Florida State never went anywhere, but Ohio State slumped. Now they're winning again. So their resume has gotten better and better and better in my eyes in the last 3 weeks. But they kind of went into this game over the weekend with Wisconsin as kind of, you know, first four, last four in. I just don't understand what's happened to them. I get Archie's frustration with the bracketologists. And I want to say this because I saw this on Twitter from some people. And, of course, it got favorited by 100 people. And just like I didn't think for myself when I saw Archie do his thing. And I guess I did think for myself, but I wasn't thinking very clearly. I thought it was kind of funny. But sometimes people read something on Twitter and they don't really think for themselves. They read it and go, yeah, that's right. Well, think about it. And what they read, what people are saying is the idea, how ridiculous the idea that Archie would insinuate that the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee, you know, cares what bracketologists say. Or the fact that he gets so upset about bracketologists when they have no role in the process. Which, in a perfect world, yes, they have no role in the process. And they have no concrete role in the process. Do we live in a perfect world? No. There's a reason why, and this is going too far, but people stick with me here. There's a reason why when a case goes to court, lawyers on both sides want jurors to not read the newspapers. They don't want, because jurors are human, they don't want them to be affected by what they read and what they hear. And jurors would tell you, we're not going to be affected by that, but it seeps in your head. And is it the factor? If, like the selection committee, is it the factor if Joe Lenardi says IU's out? No, it's not the factor. It's not the RPI. It's not anything. But it's in the back of their head that on national TV they keep hearing IU's out, or they keep hearing IU's on the bubble, and that's just in the back of their head, whether they even know it or not. So the idea that bracketologists play zero role in this when the whole country watches their shows and reads about them and talks about them, but they play no role? That's naive. That's not the world we live in.
Yeah, very good point. Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star, presented by Coffee Crossing. I want to close our spot today with a subject, and I saw you tweeted about this earlier, and I know you've had some conversations even going with the IHSA about it, and it brought back, and I don't know if you're going to write about this further or if there's a column coming on this subject or not, but when I saw your tweets this morning, it was three or four of them about Luke Brown, his Blackford team, who, by the way, early plug, I told you, coming to New Albany in December of next year to play the Bulldogs at the Doghouse in a regular season game. But his Blackford team getting ready to play in LaPel in the regional round of the tournament this weekend. Obviously, the gym is not huge. It seats some people, but there's a very limited number of tickets that are going to be on sale for the crazed Blackford fans. And it so much reminds me of the situation we had at Seymour for regional and semi-state recent years ago with Romeo Langford at New Albany. But, Greg, you inquired about why can't the regional be moved to a larger location because Blackford fans, a lot of them that have supported Luke and the team all season long, have been a big part of this great scene in Indiana high school basketball, they're going to be left out of the regional with so few tickets available.
Yeah, and when I write about a fan base or a city or whatever I do sometimes, the smaller towns especially, they notice, you know, not all of them, but people do notice. And so sometimes when they feel wronged, they come to me. And that's why I didn't even realize, you know, I'm not paying attention that much to ticket sales. Well, okay, I'm not paying attention at all to ticket sales for regional. But a bunch of Blackford fans reached out to me. Hell, I think Luke's dad reached out to me, not in a bad way, but just letting me know, hey, this is what's happening in our city. Is that, you know, everybody's upset. And so I knew from, you know, the horse's mouth that this is what's going on. So anyway, I called the IHSA and got a guy named Paul Neidig, who's in charge of their, maybe you know that name, but Paul
sure.
Neidig is in charge of their, yeah, their tournaments and their finances and all that, and just asked them, financially speaking, doesn't it make sense for the IHSA to move something like this to the Wigwam or some, I mean, lapel seats 3,000. How crazy, how beautiful is Indiana high school basketball that a 3,000-seat gym isn't big enough? Isn't even close to big. I mean, how beautiful is that about our – you can't – this doesn't happen anywhere else, okay? This story doesn't happen anywhere else because nowhere else does 3,000 people need to be tripled for a high school game that's like four games for the state championship. It just doesn't happen. But here it is here. So I asked him, why don't you, you know, just hypothetically speaking, devil's advocate, why don't you move it and make a lot more money? And he said a couple things that made sense. One is, you know, this is a big undertaking. It requires a lot of volunteers. You can't just decide to move it with 4 days' notice. Especially, you know, you order the concessions and all that. It's a bunch of stuff that you don't think about. But then also he said, more importantly, he said, this is where it stops for me, is that the city of LaPel, you know, bid for this thing and won the bid without any financial. They didn't bid for it and, like, promised 10,000. They just, you know, they bid for it and got it. And LaPel's population, he didn't tell me this, but I looked it up, population 2,400. He said he knows what this event will mean to LaPel because people come to the first two games and there's like a five-hour break and there's more games. Everybody's going to be going to dinner, to lunch, to whatever. Maybe if there's any hotels in LaPel, they're going to spend the night before or that night, or gas stations, whatever. It's going to pump a ton of money. This might be the biggest one-day event in LaPel's year. And in fact, I'm sure it is financially. So who do you make unhappy? Because granted, someone's going to be unhappy. Do you make all those Blackford fans unhappy? And I get it. I get they want to go. Or do you make the whole city of LaPel that has done nothing wrong, do you make them unhappy and cost them all this money and all this exposure too? So they're not even thinking about moving it, and I get that.
Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star. I can remember a time, and gosh, I'd have to go back and think. I want to think Butler University, Hinkle Fieldhouse. I know that there have been some rules that NCAA Division I arenas can't be used for high school tournaments and things like that, maybe outside of the state finals. I can't remember the exact rule, but I remember a time when you could go across the regional and semi-state weekends and pick out a handful of events that were not played at high school facilities because of exactly what we're talking about, capacity and leaving fans out, and it's more of a moneymaker for the IHSA, the more people obviously they can get there. But it seems like recently, maybe part of it's the rule that you can't use college facilities, D1 college facilities, and maybe part of it something else, but it seems that there's been a real push to get the tournament, even the big rounds, the semi-state and so forth, back on high school campuses, because I think everything, unless I'm missing something, I think every round, sectional, all the way through semi-state is now on a high school campus. But boy, it wasn't like that a number of years ago. And of course, again, I know there are some rules that are out of the IHSA's control, but there are other buildings, and maybe not a ton, but there are other buildings available, other high schools even available that in the area that have more seating, more capacity. But definitely interesting. And boy, that Luke Brown and Blackford situation has been a fun one to follow. And I believe as he takes a step up a grade, it's going to be even more fun to track next year as well. And I'm glad people here in the area are going to get a chance to see him right here at New Albany.
Yeah, so New Albany fans, can I put this into to make this apples and apples to y'all down there with Romeo? You all saw it. Hell, I saw it. I was at Seymour, and I saw it. We all know what Romeo, the crowd he attracted, and not just locally, New Albany fans, but others too wanted to come see him. We all know that. So I loved it. And Romeo, I think I wrote this a few months ago. He attracted the single biggest crowd. Group ticket sales in Indiana Pacers history for a visiting player. I mean, it's still happening. But Luke Brown is, I don't want to say bigger than Romeo. I'm not saying bigger than Romeo. But he's every bit as big as far as the attraction. He just is. And Blackford has one-third the population of New Albany, and but his attraction level is, I've seen them both, and they're the same. It's amazing. It's, you know, it's Romeo's amazing, Luke's amazing. Can you imagine if Romeo was still in school and Romeo played Luke? We'd have to move that game to the damn Superdome.
Wow. Yeah, you're exactly right. Greg Doyle, thank you so much. I'm sure you'll be at the Big Ten tournament, and when we talk with next Tuesday, we'll be prepping for the start of the NCAA tournament. We'll know at that point and discuss at that point if the Hoosiers are for sure in the field or not, and I'm sure will be a fun day.
Yeah, I'm a little bit low on energy right now. I need some dark chocolate coffee. Who's hooking me up? Who's hooking me up?
Drive an hour and a half south, and we got you.
Okay, I'm coming. Here I come.
All right. Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star. Greg, thanks for the chat. And I just saw this as well on Twitter. I've got it up in front of me. The Ivy League has canceled its conference tournament due to the coronavirus. So that means regular season champion Yale gets the NCAA tournament bid automatically. I just was talking about this. When would it affect sports and even more closer to home, even at the college level perhaps? And amazing to see that. I'm not saying I disagree, but definitely going to be interesting to see with the timing of this, if this affects high school state tournaments locally, Indiana or Kentucky, if this could affect the NCAA tournament, because if one location gets thrown off or canceled or you know, the fans can't be there. I guess with fans not there, it can still go on as scheduled. But if something were to get canceled, how would that throw off the rest of the tournament? I can't even imagine the logistical nightmares that could be for the NCAA and people involved in administrating the tournament. But definitely interesting times right now, no question about it. Not just with sports and how it's affected, but many, many other things, education, so many other things as well. We'll head to a commercial break. We're back with Brandon Hoffman of Silver Creek. We're going to talk about the Dragons, their sectional week and championship last week, and we'll also be talking about the Washington Regional, Heritage Hills, their opponent on Saturday morning, and much more. Stay with us for that. It's the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
You know, a basketball hero around here is treated like a god.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
You know, most people would kill to be treated like a god just for a few moments.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back in this segment. Brandon Hoffman, the coach of Silver Creek, joins us to talk about the Dragons, sectional champions again. It's Silver Creek's sixth sectional crown in 7 years. Just an amazing feat by Coach Hoffman, his players, and program. And Coach Hoffman, I tell you what, a very busy week during sectional week. I know you're the favorite. I know you're the number one ranked team. Lots of people already have you playing in the state championship game, but there's something about sectional week, going through it, being successful, building a base for what could come in the state tournament, and I think the Dragons passed that sectional test each night with flying colors. A good week for your team.
Yeah, I mean, we're not taking anything for granted, Matt. I mean, it was a grind to get through our sectional, and you're right, there's nothing that can replicate the postseason, and it's just a lot of fun when you get to go through it and, you know, experience a busy week, playing 3 games in 4 days, and just really proud of how our guys performed.
Brandon Hoffman of Silver Creek joins me. His team, as they head to the Washington Regional on Saturday, is 25-2, number one ranked 3A team in the state of Indiana. There was a lot made of your Friday night sectional semifinal game against North Harrison, even before both teams had won and officially advanced to that game. In the regular season, I think it was an 8-point win. It was one of your closer games in conference play and against sectional opponents during the regular season. So I think, myself included, I thought that would be a big barometer for this team and how you were playing at this time of year against a quality opponent that also had had a really nice close to the regular season and one of their better regular seasons in history, to be quite honest. You guys passed that test as well and did so in a big way. The game was close maybe through the first period, but after that point, slowly but surely, the Dragons began pulling away, and by the time the game got to its later stages, you all were well in control of that contest. What did the North Harrison game and the way you won that game, the margin you won that game, what did that tell you about your Silver Creek team?
Well, there's a lot that we could take away from that. First of all, I mean, of course, everybody's always praising Coach Lefebvre, and rightfully so. He's definitely made his mark around here. And he had a phenomenal season with his team. That was, you know, you kind of go throughout the year, and you always are kind of keeping an eye on who you think the biggest competition is for you to win your sectional. That's kind of how we were with North Harrison. I think we, you know, we probably saw him play 15 times this year. And they got a great group. I mean, the McIntyre kid is going to be a stud as a sophomore. He's so hard to guard. And then their big guys, LT Hatton, and then probably one of my favorite players to scout this year was Braden Jenkins. And it was a toughness test. I mean, they played so hard, and they're so physical. And I was really proud of our mental toughness as well. It was a packed gym, and, you know, they went on a run and actually won the first quarter, and then we kind of hunkered down and won the second quarter, then got to go on a big run the third that kind of separated it. And just really proud. It was a whole team effort of our guys that game.
Talking with Brandon Hoffman of Silver Creek as his team preps for the regional. They play at Washington on Saturday morning. They've got the first game at the Washington Regional. It will tip off at 10:30. We'll be on the air a little before 10 o'clock with our pregame coverage on Saturday. If you can't make the trip down to Washington, just over 2 hours or so from the Sellersburg community. You're going to take on Heritage Hills. I really think you and Heritage Hills, even back when the season ended a year ago after your state championship year, you guys were kind of almost immediately circled as two of the favorites coming out of 3A South for this season, and you got the opportunity to play those guys up at the Hall of Fame Classic in Newcastle, and it was a great win for you, 82-78 in overtime, a game that a lot of people at that somewhat early part of the season were very, very excited to watch. So you've got a good feel for them. You guys have played each other in the summer. Your kids are familiar with their kids. It's a program out of Southern Indiana that you've tracked, I'm sure, throughout the season, even after your game with them back at Newcastle. What do you make of this team? What are some things when you say Heritage Hills that jump out at you that you know your team's going to have to be prepared for if you want to be successful in that first game at Washington on Saturday?
Well, you're right, Matt. I mean, I think anytime you're playing a team that has three 1,000-point scorers, you know they're going to put points on the board. I mean, they got Sherry and Becker and the junior named Sisley, those guys all scored 1,000 points. You know, they average in the mid-70s, and they just they play a fast-paced game. They like to press and trap and shoot threes, and he's a big boy in the middle. But it's someone, once again, like I said, we've sent assistant coaches down over there to watch a couple games in person here the last couple months, because we thought we'd meet up with them again. And it's going to take a great effort. I mean, it's going to take a great effort. We didn't play our best game. We played against them in December, and I think we can play a lot better. I think we've improved quite a bit since then. But I'm sure, you know, Coach Hawkins does too with his team. And I'm just super excited to get to play those guys. I know this has been a big year for them. They've been building up to for, you know, since that group was in middle school. So, can't wait for it, buddy.
Heritage Hills 22-3 on the season. And one of the things I'm most excited about, obviously, your team is playing great, Coach. It's so fun to watch Trey Kaufman, Cooper Jacoby, and I even want to add Northern to the mix. He really has been fun to watch, and got to see all three of your sectional games and two of them that we broadcasted. But one of the things, in addition to seeing your team play in such a big deal and big environment on Saturday, that I'm looking forward to is being back at Washington. It's a gym that I've not been in a ton, maybe one or two times, and it's always been for all-star games or things that maybe the crowd isn't going to be fantastic like it will be on Saturday. So I'm looking forward to tournament basketball at the Hatchett House, one of the great gymnasiums in the state and in Southern Indiana. You've had a chance to be there before. You've been very successful in that gym before. Talk a little bit about that environment, because I know for guys that love the game and the environment of high school basketball as we do, that's also meaningful to you, and I'm sure that you explain that to your team as well if they don't get it.
Well, the Hatchett House has always been special to me. You know, when we first started coaching and we weren't winning sectionals, that was where the regional was, and it was almost like, you know, heaven. Like, you want to get there. Like, that's your goal, to get there. And I tell you what, man, like, I've been blessed so much the last couple of years to play in some really, really cool environments. I mean, the semi-state at Seymour, of course, Bankers Life. You know, the regional was at Southridge last year. But it's going to be hard to beat playing in the Hatchett House with the number 1, 2, 3 ranked teams in 3A. And then you throw in the home team, Washington's playing, who's going to have the whole town there. So I anticipate standing room only, 8,000 people. I mean, who's got it better than us, right? I mean, that's incredible.
Absolutely. Going to be lots of fun. 4 local teams, Floyd Central, Silver Creek, Providence, and Christian Academy, will play for regionals on Saturday. We wish all of you, Coach, the very best. Your team is playing great basketball. We look forward to being there. Of course, Lee Kelly, big Silver Creek fan, Silver Creek grad, and we'll bring play-by-play to those who maybe can't get a ticket or can't make their way down. But we wish you the best. It's going to be a fun day.
Thanks, Coach, and best of luck to Todd and Ryan and Coach Kerberg as well. I'm super happy for them. They're going to represent our area really well, and I just can't wait to tip off on Saturday. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Very well said. Brandon Hoffman of Silver Creek taking some time out in the middle of his day at Silver Creek High School to join us. We'll head to a commercial break. When we come back, a final quick segment with Mike Pegram of Pigs.com. We take more in-depth look at IU, Nebraska, Big Ten Tournament, and more coming up next right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Final quick segment. Mike Pegram of Pigs.com is with us as we get closer and closer to the start of the postseason at the conference tournament level for Indiana. They take on Nebraska on Wednesday night, just over 24 hours away from that contest in Indianapolis at the Big Ten tournament. One of 2 games on the Wednesday opening evening of Big Ten conference play. And Mike, as we take a look at Nebraska, obviously it's a team that has had its fair share of struggles this year. Obviously, it's a team that Indiana needs to beat. Talking earlier in the program, clearly I think Indiana can get much more negativity from a loss, obviously, than the positivity that they'll get from a win in this game. But also seeing that Nebraska is going to be without its starting guards, both Burke and Mack will not play in the Big Ten Conference, according to what Nebraska put out yesterday following a press conference from Coach Hoiberg.
Yeah, we just found out in the last hour that Cam Mack won't be playing. And earlier this morning, Deshaun Burke also was out. It just, you know, that's a lot. That's a big part of their team. You know, so you know, if Indiana were to lose that game, it would be disastrous. But I don't expect that to happen given the talent gap that Nebraska has going into this game. And like you said, there's a lot to be gained, but a lot to lose from that game. So I do think if Indiana wins tomorrow, as expected, that probably will be enough. We haven't seen a lot of bit steals the last week. By, you know, other conference tournaments. But a win Thursday would kind of guarantee everything and take it from being anything to worry about. But looks good for Indiana just because they should be able to win tomorrow now.
I tell you, it's just amazing, Mike, and I know Indiana fans have to feel the same way, but with the guests that I have on this program you know, over the last couple of weeks, my question has been, what does Indiana have to do to get in the tournament? I've asked you that multiple times, and answers have changed because Indiana's had some wins and then had some losses, and you've got to pay attention to other teams on the bubble, and now that conference tournaments are started, are there going to be any bid thieves, as you mentioned as well? There's just lots of moving pieces in this, but it's amazing to me that we're through the conference season, the regular season. We've got the tournament ahead, and there is so many different answers, just on Indiana specifically, by so many different bracketologists and so many different people that cover the beat, cover the team, as to if Indiana needs to win two games, needs to win one game, and then there's still a contingent of people that think Indiana is safe no matter what. And even if Indiana is safe right now no matter what, with so much uncontrollable this week with these other conference tournaments and the opportunity for people that would get an at-large bid to get knocked out and of the tournament and maybe allow another team that would not get an at-large bid to win the conference tournament, with so many uncontrollable things like that, I don't see how you could be comfortable that Indiana will get in the tournament if they don't do anything else from this point forward.
Yeah, I think that you'd be sweating bricks if they lose tomorrow night, because that would be, you know, a really, really bad loss. Because Nebraska's, you know, way down on the net ranking. And so it wouldn't be Indiana's worst loss of the season, I believe. And, you know, that would drop them quite a bit. And they're only 60 in the net ranking themselves. Now, I know that it's flawed, and the NCAA committee will take that into account. But that would definitely change the outlook if they lose tomorrow, especially given that they would be, Nebraska would be playing without two of their top players. That would make it even worse in the committee's eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike Pegram, Peaks.com, is my guest. The Big Ten tournament as a whole, now that the bracket is set, it looks like just a fun event all the way around, especially when you get to Friday. Even Thursday as well should be some tremendous games and matchups where it's hard to not believe there are going to be some higher seeds or lower seeds, I should say, beating some of the favorites or some of the more the higher seeds in the tournament. I talked to a guy yesterday. He got a ticket or a booklet of tickets for the entire tournament. He's going to take in, his goal is to take in every game at the Big Ten tournament in Indianapolis this year. And it sounds like a pretty fun goal to have, one I wish I had time to do myself. I see a really fun tournament. I don't think this is any surprise. I know we've talked some about how the conferences went this year. And yesterday, all the Big Ten postseason awards and all conference teams came out based on coaches and media votes. And just looking at that list yesterday, I'm kind of envious that I can't take in the entire conference tournament. I think it's going to be a very, very fun and potentially wild and crazy conference tournament if it goes anything like what the regular season has went.
Yeah, it's been the most parity in the league, I think, since I've been covering it. You know, and I go back to the late 90s, I think really is most parity. I mean, Indiana has 11 seed and probably in the NCAA tournament. I mean, that's never come close to happening. And so it's just crazy. Three teams tied at the top for the league title. So, there should be some upsets for sure. And after the first day or so, any game, there should be no surprise who wins that game.
Mike, real quick. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Real quick. Go ahead. We've got to get out of here. I do have one quick thing I want to ask. Devontae Green, any real concern about his ankle based on what Archie said on the coach's show last night?
No, I think it's just being cautious with him. It might impact how many minutes he plays, but I would definitely expect him to play. He actually did play the second half because it was a late first half injury. They're just trying to rest it and get him in good of shape. And given Indiana's situation, I would think he would try to give it a go on Wednesday.
Mike Pegram, Peaks.com. Mike, thanks for the chat. Enjoy the Big Ten tournament. I'll be back with you Wednesday right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.